Hello, my friends. This is Ryan Gard coming to you live from my kitchen table. This is take number two because my kids just walked in. They're home with me because Lindsay went to work and I haven't started my new role yet. But they just came in screaming bloody murder at each other because one of them bumped into another one. So God bless all of the stay-at-home parents. This gig is not for the weary of heart. But I wanted to share with you guys a little bit here from my kitchen table what we discussed last week in our Sunday gathering. So if you were there, you can skip this. But if you weren't there, maybe this will feel like an invitation to come to the next one because it was great. It was more of a discussion than a sermon. There was a sermon, you could say, but there was more back and forth and circling up and chewing on some of this because this is really important. These topics that Jesus taught through in Matthew 5, and we just discussed together. The church has been discussing this for 2,000 years now, more than that, the topics at hand anyway. So I want to dive in and share with you some things. So here's how I premised this whole thing on Sunday. I asked everybody, even just to circle up, I said, hey, here's a thought or a question. What did you have to unlearn as you got older that you were taught when you were younger? Maybe this was when you were a teen or before that, or maybe even in your 20s and 30s, you were taught certain things about how the world works and how you should function in it. But then you realize that's actually not the way the world works, or it's not the healthiest way that the world works, and it's not how I should engage. It's not how I should do business. It's not how I should do relationships. It's not how I should, parent. It's not how all those things. So I said, hey, what things have you had to unlearn that you were taught? Some things maybe that permeated your mind and your thoughts, and it created a worldview that one day, for whatever reason, you realize that's actually not accurate. That's not the best way to understand that. So that's exactly what Jesus is doing here in Matthew 5, 21 to 30. That was the text we covered. There's so much here. I premised that we were going to be talking about anger and lust and adultery and hell last Sunday. And so some of our younger families were like, you know what? We're going to go to the lake. So maybe this is for you. If you missed it, because maybe you weren't so sure where I was going to go. This is Matthew 5, 21. Jesus teaching people who were familiar with the law, familiar with everything to the left of Matthew. And so he says this, you've heard that it was said to the people long ago, you shall not murder, and anyone who murders will be subject to judgment. But I tell you that anyone who is angry with a brother or sister will be subject to judgment. So he likens murder and anger here and says that they're both subject to judgment. Again, anyone who says to a brother or sister, raka, is answerable to the court. And anyone who says, you fool, will be in danger of the fire of hell. Therefore, if you're offering your gift at the altar, and there remember that your brother or sister has something against you, leave your gift there in front of the altar. First, go and be reconciled to them, the people that have something against you, and then come and offer your gift. Settle matters quickly with your adversary who's taken you to court. Do it while you're still together on the way, or your adversary may hand you over to the judge, and the judge may hand you over to the officer, and you might be thrown into prison. Truly, I tell you, you will not get out until you have paid the last penny, whatever you owe. And it says in verse 27, you've heard that it was said, you shall not commit adultery. But I tell you that anyone who looks at a woman lustfully has already committed adultery with her in his heart. If your right eye causes you to stumble, gouge it out and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to be thrown into hell. And if your right hand causes you to stumble, cut it off and throw it away. It is better for you to lose one part of your body than for your whole body to go into hell. Woof. Matthew 5 coming to you with a little bit of aggression. Now, this is Jesus who, Matthew 5, 1 through 26, we've all been really enjoying it. It's been fantastic. It's everybody's invited. Everybody's welcomed. It's the who is blessed. It's the least of these. It's so good. And then it's this. It's like, holy cow. It felt like a bait and switch maybe for the folks that were listening the first time. Like you had this feel-good message, but now it seems like you're raising the bar. Kept saying, you've heard that it was said, and he's saying that because they had heard that it was said, you shouldn't murder. You've heard that it was said, you shouldn't commit adultery. A better way to understand that is actually he's saying to them, you've understood it this way. So it wasn't like, wait, I heard the wrong thing. No, I understood it this way. And he dives right into anger, like just in the gritty rawness of humanity. He just goes, let's not waste any time. Let's talk about anger. And anyone who looks at someone with this anger and calls them a fool, just raka, you idiot, moron. Anyone who does that, he's essentially saying what you've done is you've promoted yourself into the role of judge. Like you've been wronged, so now you're the judge and the jury. They've become an idiot, and they did something wrong to you, so now you get to contempt and curse them. You get to call them a fool. You get to say things like, you'll never be a good enough fill in the blank. You didn't just lie. You are a liar. And in these situations of anger, you know, you've had yours and I've had mine, and some of them, they have global ramifications, and some of them, it's just one-on-one relationships, and I have mastered the art of anger in my late teens and early 20s. I mean, I have memories of not having memories. I remember raging at this kid named Tommy and his brother Jason, both of which could have whooped me, but my mind let me think that for a moment, what they had done to me, they did something wrong to me, even indirectly, and it led me to be out on their sidewalk on their porch in South Scottsdale. And I remember not remembering because I was screaming into their house from their sidewalk for them to come out and fight me. I was with a bunch of friends of mine and I was just challenging them. The mystery of my mind and the wonder of what it is to be human is I think I stepped into a level of rage because I'd been wronged and I wanted to make it right and I wanted to, you know, make it right. But I remember there's 2 or 3 minutes where people told me what happened because I don't remember because I blacked out. Not wild. So angry. So much rage. I'd been so wronged. I felt like that I had some judgment ready for them. And again, I'm so glad they didn't come outside because I would probably look different if they did. But I was such an angry young man. Even into my 20s coming into the church, I realized I was just getting angry at these silly, maybe you're like that, you know, in traffic or petty things. But what happens is when you're angry because you've been wronged or you're seeing someone be wronged and you're angry, you really quickly turn into the judge, and then who's got the power? The judge. The judge has got all the power, and so isn't that nice? When you're angry and you start calling everyone fools and idiots, you know, if we're honest, it feels good because then we have the power over them. And then I asked the crowd, I just said, hey, let's take a minute here. Let's talk about what we get angry about. And I just asked everybody, what are some things that people get mad about that don't matter? Like, what are some things that don't matter? And, you know, someone's traffic. And there was a handful of things that people get really angry about. Sports, you know, Phoenix Suns fans, you know what I'm talking about. What are we doing? And there's a million things that we get angry about that ultimately, a year from now, 10 years from now, 1,000 years from now, I think we will look back and go, well, that was dumb. And I got really mad about that. And then I asked him, okay, after a few minutes of them kind of chatting about that, I said, well, what are some things that people don't get mad about that actually do matter? We had a really healthy discussion about the things that, gosh, there's some things that we don't actually get angry about at all. Maybe they just don't directly affect us, and so we don't have the energy around it. And then we talked about lust. What a great transition. You know, just let's go from anger right into lust. And lust is, in my notes, I wrote that it's a desire that turns into a demand. A desire that turns into a demand. And it doesn't have to be body to body here. It's a desire, a consuming lust, a consuming, I have to have it, a consuming, it's that thing that becomes like most important in your life. Maybe it's something you think about and throughout the day you're just plotting to arrange the next whatever it may be for that thing. And it's that desire that turns into a really unhealthy demand, which, you know, leads into Jesus's next point, which is adultery, which is using someone else just for your pleasure. And there's obvious ways here. And we talked about adultery and it shared some really sort of gritty, raw, honest things about it. But then I also went, where does this start? Like, adultery doesn't just come out of nowhere. It has, you know, actually, what we said was adultery has a cousin named idolatry. When your spouse becomes a means to an end. When your kids, you know, even, so the illustration I use is like maybe if your kids' performance is something you need to fill a profound emptiness in your own heart, that's a version of adultery. It isn't a relationship for the sake of relationships. It isn't serving someone and outdoing, just trying to outdo, what am I trying to say? It's not trying to honor someone. There's the thought. It's this idea that, you know, let's go back to the kids illustration. Like, if your kid fails and doesn't meet your expectations, does your affection towards them change? Or when a relationship isn't what it should be and you start to put up walls, or maybe even someone that looks up to you and looks to you, maybe even literally looks to you for affirmation, affection, belonging. And if you withhold your eyes because they aren't meeting some sort of need that you have, when, you know, like, you and I aren't filled because they didn't fill in the blank, that's another version of adultery and idolatry. And it's just nasty soup that Jesus goes, no. If you take steps in that direction, that's unhealthy. Now listen, Jesus lavished with grace and all the love in the world for you right in this moment where you are. But he also here, I think he's getting to the heart of what it really truly is to be a human in the wrestling match with lust and anger. And I said this, because right now, even if you're listening to this, maybe this is easier to listen to than to sit in a room where people are talking. Because you can just, you know, ignore it or get to it later, whatever. But until you're willing to, like, face your capacity to be indicted by this text, to be found lacking or wanting by this text, to be found, all right, that is actually who I am. I have seen this play out in my own life. Until you're, like, willing to at least go there and admit that, and I'm not trying to shame anyone or myself. I'm not trying to say you're terrible or horrible or you're an angry, lusting monster. I'm not. But until you're willing to face the truth that we're all capable of traveling down this road, I don't know if you'll experience the freedom and the life that you're actually meant to. I just don't know if you're not honest. And I'm going to come back to that in just a minute. Here's the complexity. Here's what we talked about. In just the last few minutes, I just want to share this. Like, this thought that lust and anger, these two emotions, are simply misguided emotions. Lust and anger are misguided emotions. And here's what I mean. I think that underneath lust, you know, maybe it's relational lust, maybe it's physical lust, maybe it's, I just have to have, you know, fill in the blank, whatever that is. Underneath that lust, I think it's a desire. I think it's a desire for, a good desire for intimate, like, union with God, for communion, for connection with God and with others. Underneath lust is this desire to be united with God, with your maker, to know him, to experience all that you're meant to experience. So lust is simply a misguided emotion. It's aimed at the right thing, but it's misguided when we go try to find it in the wrong places. Does that make sense? And underneath anger is this, it's a desire. Now, there's arguments out there that you can't do anything with anger, that you can't do better without anger. That might be fair. So that's a side note. But underneath anger, at least in my experience, has been a desire, a good desire, to stand against injustice. And obviously this can go wrong quick. But underneath this anger is this desire to stand against injustice. Like, your heart is meant to be angry when people are mistreated. That should stir something up in you when resources are hoarded. That should stir something up in you when fathers and daughters are drowning in rivers just trying to escape violence. Whoever's fault that is, that's not as it should be. And that should stir something in you. It should break your heart, but it should lead us to stand up against injustice and fight for one another. I think those are healthy emotions. Those are healthy directions. And I remember a pastor saying that when he was talking about this sort of wrestling match, that we have these legitimate needs that we try to meet in illegitimate ways. Legitimate needs, but we try to reach them in illegitimate ways. Like, legitimate needs, we all need certain things to survive. We all need certain things to thrive. We all need certain things. But when our list becomes like a list of musts, like, I've got to have nice stuff, I've got to be comfortable. I've got to be, I must be perceived in a certain way. When we must be entertained, when we must satisfy every impulse that comes to mind, those musts have really, they've turned into a lust. And that's all just surface level. There's so much more to you. There's so much more complexity and beauty to what it is to be human with all these desires, this mishmash of emotions. And, you know, until you let the spirit, I use the word indict you, but that sounds like a courtroom. I think I just want to allow God to show me and expose. And I like a little more aggressive language in my own personal life. But for you and for me, maybe it's just, there is no shame. This is an examination. It's saying, okay, God, where am I trying to meet these legitimate needs that you've given me, you've wired into me to be known and to be loved and to be accepted and to experience joy, to experience intimacy? Where have you given me these needs that I'm trying to, you know, meet them in illegitimate ways? And there shouldn't be a voice of shame in that moment. It's just examining and going deeper. And your ego and your false self will respond with, you know, excuses and rationalizations and you fool. And all that's going to come bubbling back up to the top. And there's room for it. There's room for it. Jesus can make room for it. But what I want to do is I want to create rooms, literal rooms, on Sundays and Thursdays and whenever we gather, where we can just name our brokenness and be honest about it so that we can heal from it. Like, what a watching world wants to know is if the church will actually like name our brokenness and be honest about it instead of rationalizing and excusing it and pointing our finger back out at people that we think are doing it less than or worse than. That's what the watching world wants to know. Like, will you admit that Matthew 5, 21 to 30 is as much applicable to you and as much necessary for you and for me as for anyone? Because we are all humans and we all fall short. And that's the beautiful part. You know, they say the ground is level, but we get so distracted. So think about it. I want to close with this quote from C.S. Lewis. He said this: it would seem that our Lord finds our desires not too strong, but too weak. He says, we are half-hearted creatures fooling about with drink and sex and ambition when infinite joy is offered us. Like an ignorant child who wants to go on making mud pies in a slum because he cannot imagine what is meant by the offer of a holiday at the sea. He said, we are far too easily pleased. It's beautiful. We're far too easily pleased. We're far too easily pleased. Now, when you see firsthand the real damage that's done when we don't pay attention to this, the concentric circles of pain, the ripples that sometimes for generations, a family or a city or a country can have to deal with, a world in which these ripples have created the porn industry and the child porn industry and modern day slavery and a slew of addictions and every other form of brokenness. Now you see why Jesus' strong language makes a lot of sense. So you are, and I, we are saved by grace. And another pastor I remember saying that this is going to require some grace-driven effort. It's going to require that you're honest about what it is that's tripped you up and caused you to stumble. And then we'll wrap our arms around one another and say, I get it, I understand, me too. I know that God can meet us in these emotions. We just have to pay attention. So, my friends, I hope this was helpful. I hope this idea and this understanding that these things, these are misguided emotions that when dealt with appropriately, when understood correctly, and when cared for appropriately, can lead you to a really healthy life. A really healthy way of seeing the world, a less combative and a less fearful way of seeing yourself and your place in the world. So my friends, I hope you'll join us this Sunday as we talk and continue to talk through Matthew 5. We're going to be in the eye for an eye text, so there's plenty to be said there. I will see you on Sunday at 10:30. Love you guys. Take care.